All right. Thank you very much. How are you all doing? Fantastic. All right. So I have no disclosures, just for those of you who are professionals here. I am not paid for this lectureship. I don't have any stock or whatever in some of the things I'm presenting. I have an interest in nutrition because as a physician, I get no education on nutrition. So I did a master's in preventive medicine. So that's where a bulk of my interest in nutrition comes from. I have an interest in longevity medicine, hence the lecture last night on the Blue Zones. Not just from teaching my patients, but hey, I want to live a long time. I want to have quantity and quality as well. But there are very few topics that have so much hype about them as nutrition. So how do you tell the true from the false? How do you tell fact from fiction? How do you tell science from fad? So we're going to talk about that. So as we begin, I'm going to show you just a diagram of the anatomy of the human body. And my question is very simple. Where does digestion begin?
In the mouth.
Everyone says in the mouth, but I'm going to prove to you that it doesn't begin there. Look at your neighbor, okay? Look at your neighbor. That was pretty amusing, actually. She looked over and went, not quite that much. But if you look at your neighbor, right, there's a lot of aspects that are not just the mouth. What are the things you look at when you look at someone right away? What are the first things you look at? Their eyes, right? So let's look at the eye. Can you imagine looking at this panel? How many colors do you see? Forget the pin. Like, I think there's a problem with the red on the pin on that projector, because that definitely, my side looks a lot better than that. I don't know if you guys can fix the connection or whatever, but how many different colors do you see there? For those of you who aren't colorblind. So, yeah, exactly. And there's different shades of the same color, wouldn't you say? You know what I find very intriguing is when you look at fruits, vegetables, plant foods, right? You get a very wide myriad of colors. Now, how many different colors is meat? Raw, cooked, right? I mean, maybe two, three? I mean, not a whole lot. Is there a lot of variety in color in, like, cheese, butter, eggs, animal products, just in general? Would you say that there's as much variety there? Probably not, right? Probably not, if you're honest. However, what's very interesting is when you look at your retina, you have cells in that retina called rods and cones. Anyone know what those do? Well, what are their functions? What are they for? What are the rods for? What are the cones for? Anyone know? So I'll give you a hint. A cat has lots of rods, tons of rods. Yes, light perception. That's correct. So rods are for light perception. People say black and white, but that's technically a misnomer. It allows you to perceive light. And when you have lots of cones, you can see in the dark. Does that make sense? Now, if you put a cat in absolute darkness, it cannot see. But even if you just give it a few photons of light, it can make its way around pretty easily. Now, there are organisms that have very great acuity. That's different. That has to do with the lenses, not so much the retina itself, the shape of the eye, etc. Birds of prey have very, very sharp vision, much sharper than ours. But any guesses as to which organism is the champion of cones? You. Interesting. You have the ability to not only differentiate, but to appreciate various colors over and above many, many organisms. When you keep that in mind, perhaps digestion doesn't quite begin in the mouth. Now, shake your neighbor's hand. Shake your neighbor's hand. Do you think that hand was designed for eating meat. No, really. Really, I'm serious. Look at the hand, right? What do you think the design is for your hand? What? Hold things, right? Exactly. That's what separates you from a primate, right? What separates from you, like there's an injury to the recurrent branch of the median nerve. It's called the million-dollar nerve in hand surgery. If you miss it, it's a million-dollar lawsuit, basically. And what that nerve does, it allows your thumb to oppose, right? Because otherwise you get a deformity called ape hand, right? And the ape hand is like this. They can't oppose. Does that make sense? Right? That's a very unique feature of your hand. You have the ability to grasp, right? But it's very interesting. If you look at a neurological exam called two-point discrimination, that's where I'm taking one or two little pinpricks and I'm asking you, do you feel one or two? The skin on your back, not so sensitive. What do you think about your fingertips? Highly sensitive. Not just sensitive, but your fingertips have the ability to discriminate texture to within a millimeter. Did you know that? Very, very fine ability to do that. In fact, I want to introduce you to what may be a new word for many of you. Does anyone know what I mean when I say the word homunculus? Sounds like a very funny word, doesn't it? Homunculus. Is that even real? You can type it in your phone. It is real, by the way. When you look at a graphic of the brain, the homunculus is a graphic representation on the amount of hard drive space, so to speak, that is taken up by various parts of the body. Any guesses as to what areas take up the most brain space for human beings? Any thoughts? What's the biggest portion of the homunculus, so to speak? That is close. Vision is probably third. Yes, the hands. The hands are gargantuan. If you type in homunculus, you will see this kind of like gargoyle-like man. He's really big eyes. He has a giant tongue and mouth, but his hands are the majority of his body. Your hands are designed for touch, grasp, and discrimination. How many different textures do you see here? Smooth, bumpy, furry, spiny, right? You had a little durian up there, right? Anyone like durian? I know you guys like durian. Don't lie. A lot of different textures, right? How many different textures is meat? Not a whole lot, right? Cooked or raw, right? I mean, when you consider also the second largest portion of the homunculus is the tongue. And that's not just for verbal. How many different tastes do you think you see up there? Different tastes. A variety, right? Wouldn't you say? I mean, and we're not just talking sweet, salty, sour, and bitter, the four major tastes, right? We're not talking about that. We're talking about mixtures of the two, right? Subtleties, right? How about meat? How many different tastes is meat? Well, it tastes like chicken, right? It really depends on what you flavor it with, wouldn't you say? That is really the determining factor. But that is not the case in produce, is it? A wide variety of tastes, textures, and colors. And if you want to be academically honest, you are equipped to enjoy that in many ways. However, let's go beyond that. Let's imagine for a moment that you are at home and mom has made your favorite apple pie. She's baking it. Ooh. And you're like, oh, wow. That's going to be good. What begins to happen as you're smelling that? Ah, the digestive juices start to flow, and then you wake up and it was a dream. Ah, anyone ever eaten in their dreams? I have. Did you know that digestion actually begins not in the nose, not on the hand, not in the eyes, but in the mind? I can prove that to you. I wish I'd brought a lemon. Cut a lemon in half, and I've got a half a lemon in my hand, I go, what would happen? To you, not just to me, but what would happen to you if I bit into half a lemon? Yeah, pucker power, right? Sure. Now, how does that work? You're not eating the lemon. The mind, right? It is the brain. That's the point. Yes, digestion begins in the mind, right? And that's why I look at the design of the mind. I look at the homunculus. I look at where the data is actually distributed, where the neurons are overly stacked, if that makes sense. Because that gives you an idea. Now, we haven't even touched the mouth yet. Did you know that? I have just built a foundation that your brain is decided to be appreciative of plant foods from a texture standpoint, from a taste standpoint, from a color standpoint. Now you come to the teeth. Smile at your neighbor. Hi. Give him some teeth. Give him some gum. Right? What do you think those teeth were designed for? Grind. Now, why do you say that? If you consider the most common tooth that you have in your mouth right now, anyone know what that tooth is? What kind of tooth? It is a molar, right? You have four molars, four rows of molars. In fact, you count the premolars, five, right? What do you think that tooth's designed for? What kind of tooth? It's like flat, right? Breaking down, grinding, really, right? It doesn't cut very well, actually, right? It's kind of square, right? Right? Exactly. Most of us don't have sharp canines, right? So what do you think our mouths, the teeth, were designed for? Probably plant foods, right, wouldn't you say? And here's the coup de grace in the mouth. Did you know that every single one of you, no matter what you eat, it doesn't matter. If you produce a drop of saliva, in that drop of saliva, you will find salivary amylase. What does that do? What do you think that does? Breakdowns what? Amylase, carbohydrate. But did you know it's specific to plant carbohydrate? Interesting. Intriguing. Now we move to the stomach. When you look at the stomach, you have many different cells, but I'm going to talk about the parietal cells. The parietal cells produce hydrochloric acid. That hydrochloric acid is vital for the changing of an enzyme, the pepsin-pepsinogen transfer. We talk about that. And that enzyme is important for digesting. Anyone know? Protein. If you eat more protein, you must have more active enzyme. Make sense? And if you need more active enzyme, you must have more hydrochloric acid, a lower pH, right? When you compare the stomach of a human being with the stomach of a classic carnivore, like a tiger or something like that, who do you suppose has more pepsinogen? Who do you suppose has more hydrochloric acid? Any thoughts? The tiger, how much more? Lots more? How much? 10%? 20%? Try 10 times more. Interesting. Interesting. What's that little green thing there? Anyone know? Gallbladder, what's it for? You think it was designed to accumulate stones? new, right? It contains bile, as you mentioned. What's bile for? Digest what? What does bile digest? Does anyone know? Fats. It's actually like if you would come up with a really simple explanation, it's like an emulsifier, if that makes sense. It digests fat. The greater amount of fat you eat, especially saturated fats, the more bile you must produce. Make sense, right? Now watch this. 100 million Americans have gallstones. Now, they're not all symptomatic, thank God. I mean, I'd be seeing a lot of you people in the emergency department if that was the case, right? But 1 out of 3 people, adults, have gallstones. Why do you suppose that is? Any of you ever made rock candy before? Who's made rock candy? Anyone? Here's the concept. And this is how you understand gallstone formation, or really kidney stone formation for that matter. How you make rock candy is you get what's called a supersaturated solution. You know what that is? You take sugar, right? You dissolve it in the water, and you're heating the sugar so it can dissolve more and more, and then you cool it. And then you put a little string in the solution, and what happens on the string? Crystals, right? But the same happens in you. If you are on a high fat, specifically saturated fat, then where do saturated fats come from mostly? Animal products. You are producing a lot of bile, right? The body tries to keep up. And if you combine that with a little dehydration, what do you think you get out of that mix? A gallstone, yes. You think a gallstone's a problem? Yes, if it's big enough to lodge in the cystic duct, or even worse, the pancreatic duct, right? Cholecystitis is what you get, right? What's even worse is pancreatitis. You can die from pancreatitis. Well, you could die from both, but pancreatitis is no joke. That green organ is not what it was designed for in a third of us. Pretty crazy, but true. I'm not going to talk about everything, but I'll talk about 2 more things. What's all this down here? Intestines. What do you suppose it's for? What is it for? Absorption. I heard absorption. When you look at the lumen, when you look at the actual inside of it and you zoom in, you see little things called villi. Those are finger-like projections. Why do you think there's all these little projections in the lumen? What do you think that does?
Filters out the
Stuff. Filter, yeah. It's for absorption, right? Increases surface area, right? More surface area means more absorption. Does that make sense? When you consider, though, for a moment, that not everything is about absorption, think about this. If I were to make you an Italian dish, and you have to do this when you say it, an Italian dish, right? Chicken cacciatore, right? And I said, I've been preparing this all day long, I'm simmering my sauce, made everything from scratch, I have my chicken out, it's been thawing for 12 hours. You gonna eat it? What are you afraid of? I'm a pretty good cook. Yeah, what are you afraid that's growing there now? What is it? Salmonella, right? Salmonella. You see, bacteria grow in 3 different environments: warm, dark, moist environments. Oh, but wait a minute. You are warm, dark, and moist. Yes, it's true. If you were to compare the length of your intestines with the length of a classic carnivore, again, a lion, tiger, things like that, who do you suppose has the longer intestinal tract, you or the carnivore? Now remember, that carnivore is a lot bigger than you. Yes, humans, you are correct. By how much more? Not quite, 300%. Your intestines are roughly 10 meters in length, or about 30 feet. Carnivore, average carnivore, 9. Why do you suppose that is? The carnivore eats what?
Meat.
It needs to get it in and out. Does that make sense? You want to absorb more. You don't have quite the intestinal tract as like a cow, right? That's some major absorption going on. They have 4 stomachs. Did you know that? But yours is pretty long. And I'm going to share with you just one little enzyme on an area called the brush border. The brush border is the very tip of your villi, the little finger-like projections. And on that brush border, you produce an enzyme that is called lactase. Anyone want to guess what that's for? Yes, milk. Pretty simple, right? Lactose, lactase, right? Pretty simple. The enzyme has the A's at the end for which it's derived. However, we had a lactation specialist come and lecture us when I was in med school. I trained at Stanford for my residency. I trained at Loma Linda for my MD degree. So she came in, and this was very interesting because we were combined, right? We had the MD students and we had the DDS students, the dental students. So we actually were in the same class together for this. And she was a specialist in lactation, and she put up study after study after study of showing how breast milk was superior to bottle feeding. Look at this, better bonding, higher IQ, less allergies, stronger immune system. And she went on and on and on. Finally, one of the nurse students, he couldn't take it anymore. He stood up and he said, "You've convinced me, I'm switching over." Now we all laugh at that, right? And why do we laugh? It's preposterous, right? For him to start drinking mother's milk as an adult, right? And the body doesn't lie. Your enzymatic activity of lactase is very high at the beginning of your life, but then it goes... It drops off at a certain age. Any guesses as to when it drops off? Age 2 or 3, that is correct. And why do you suppose that is? That's when you're weaned. Weaned, right? We were designed to drink milk. Our mother's milk. But we are one of the very few organisms that drinks another organism's milk after we're weaned. Does that make sense? Strange, right? Now, just for the sake of academic honesty, there are people groups who have persistence of the lactase enzymatic activity. Someone guess who those people are. Guess who has the highest persistence of lactase enzymatic activity. Not quite, but they are north.
Scandinavia.
Yes, that's correct. Norway, Sweden, Finland. Or you say Norway, Sweden, right? Finland. Why do you suppose they have up to 90% of their enzymatic activity intact? What do you think? Yeah, they drink a lot of dairy, right? And they eat a lot of cheese, right? Because what do they have to eat? In the winter, lutefisk and like animal products, right? That's it. However, the majority of Homo sapiens, us human beings, they have the drop at age 2 or 3. Especially Asians, Hispanics, and African Americans, especially. And no offense, but that's like the bulk of the world, just FYI. Right? The Caucasian race is smaller than the others. However, that still gives you an idea about the design, right? We were designed to drink milk up to a point, right? But not after. Certainly the body can compensate, and it tries, right? Just as if you eat a lot of protein, do you think your body will produce more hydrochloric acid? Sure it will. It will also produce reflux. It will also produce ulcers. It will also produce any number of problems that are common in the first world. Will your gallbladder try to keep up to a higher fat diet? Sure it will. And it will produce stones too. But wait a minute. If you're just eating plant products, where do you get your protein? Have you heard about that? Where's the protein, right? Without the meat, where's the protein? Now, does it look like this individual is protein deficient? Patrick Babomian, Germany's strongest man. Not just the strongest, but a power lifter. What he's saying, he looks kind of mean, doesn't he? Yeah. He says the strongest on earth are the plant eaters, gorillas, buffaloes, elephants, and me. In fact, what's very intriguing is that he set his records for powerlifting after he became vegan. Does he look like he's protein deficient? I don't think so. World records in powerlifting. He has more than enough protein to go around. And what we say, as a general rule, is if you have enough calories from whole plant foods, you will have enough protein. Now, there may be some, you know, times of increased demand, like if you were a powerlifter or you were an elite distance athlete, right? But most of you are not going out and doing the Ironman every weekend. You know what I'm saying? However, in general, we get too much protein. In fact, when you look at people with renal failure, what do they always put them on? A low what diet? Low protein, right? Because that has to be filtered out. Low potassium also if you have really bad kidney function, right? But that's the concept, is your body cannot store nitrogen. Does that make sense? Nitrogen is the component in the protein that your body can't store. It either has to use it or it has to detox it. And it detoxes it in the form of ammonia. The ammonium ion is NH4+. Or it connects two of them and it makes NH3-NH3. Anyone know what that is? Urea. And that appears on your little chemistry panel, right? Anyone ever looked at their lab tests? You ever wonder why they're looking at your bun? Why are they looking at my bun? Right? B-U-N. Anyone know what that is? Blood, urea, nitrogen. Right? And what happens when you get really dehydrated, the B-U-N goes up.
Right.
Because the body has to detoxify the protein. That's the concept. Someone mentioned Eskimos. And what's interesting is that the Eskimos have the highest calcium intake in the world. Did you know that? They also have the highest incidence of osteoporosis in the world. Does that surprise you? But do you know why? That can be part of it. Yes, absolutely. But they get a lot of vitamin D, though. Yeah. They eat whale, walrus, blubber, right? They're eating bone, right? So they're eating grams, like 3-4 grams of calcium. That's like 3,000-4,000 milligrams a day. But they're also eating about 400 grams of protein or more a day. And what they found, when you eat a lot of animal protein, you get protein-induced calciuria. That's a long phrase for meaning you spill calcium in the urine when you're eating too much animal protein. They've repeated the studies with plant proteins, not so much. And the reason they found that is the sulfur component. Cysteine and methionine contain more sulfur than other amino acids. And for some reason, that tends to suck the calcium out. They're wondering if it might be that the sulfate ion, right, is kind of a negative 2, and not sulfate, the sulfur ion is a negative 2, and calcium is a positive 2. So they're thinking that might be the similar electrical neutralization that's going on. But anyway, that's what happens. When you eat a lot of animal protein, you actually spill a lot of calcium in your urine. Anyone know who T. Colin Campbell is? He's a biochemist from Cornell. Ever read the China Diet Study or heard of it? What he looked at, for those of you who haven't read it, he just looked at urban China and rural China, compared their disease rates, because they are nice controls, right? Because they're similar race, right? So he can put them head to head. And who do you think ate more animal products? The city dwellers or the country dwellers? City, by a long shot. Like, if you're poor in the country, you don't want to kill the animal, right? Right? You want it to lay eggs or eat your grass or produce milk or something, right? Does that make sense? And you don't want to take your brown rice and feed it to the animal. You want to eat it. Or your soybeans, right? Does that make sense? So when he looked at the incidence of cancer and the amount of animal protein in the diet, what do you think the relationship was? As animal protein consumption went up, cancer went up. Just straightforward, right? If you're in rural China, meat is not like the entree. It's like a flavoring. Does that make sense? It's like a seasoning. It affects you in other ways, too. In rural China, the country, can you guess what the average age of menarche is? You know what I mean when I say menarche? That's an age of sexual maturity for a generation, right? The age at which a girl gets her first period. That's the, you know, that's menarche. In rural China, it's still 15 to 18. Did you know that? Interesting, isn't it? Could that be the animal protein consumption? Maybe. In the U.S. in 1850, when we consumed a lot less animal protein, did you know it was 17.25? What do you think it is now? Try 12. Some races, 11. African Americans tend to be earlier than Asians or Caucasians. Hispanics, kind of somewhere in the middle. So do you think that individual is capable of even comprehending the decision about having another life in the world at 11 or 12? Right? You know, we often wonder why, as young people, we have such a hard time with this issue, you know, waiting, right? Think about in 1850. Did they marry earlier or later? Earlier. Yeah, but when a girl had her first period when she was 17 and a half, she got married, like, shortly thereafter, right? But now, we've got kids who are, like, 8, 9. And it's just like, there's like a line of lingerie now for these middle schoolers. Have you seen some of that crazy stuff? It's insanity, right? It's not a mystery why kids have a hard time. I mean, they're loaded with hormones, right? Be difficult, right, to make that decision at 11 or 12. And the draw is still there. Does that make sense? Yeah, exactly. Maybe the hormone is found in the animal products too, right? Antibiotic residues, etc. When you look at elite athletes, go back to the Ironman. Anyone know what the Ironman is? The Ironman is what's considered to be the test of endurance races, right? It's held every year on Kona, right? It's a marathon and a crazy long bike ride and like a mile swimming. It's nuts. I mean, even to finish the Ironman is considered respectable. To win it, you're like among the absolute elite of our race. To win it twice is insane. To win it 3 times, there's only a few on this planet that have done that. Sixto Linares, 3-time winner, vegan. Yes. Many of these elite distance athletes recognize the role of a vegan diet in increasing their distance abilities. The other issue with animal proteins is that cholesterol is only found in animal products, not nuts. Did you know that? Nuts do not have cholesterol. They have fat, but they do not have cholesterol. Also, most of the saturated fat, which is the real player in raising your cholesterol, is found in animal products. Well, wait a minute. If you're vegan, you don't get enough calcium. Isn't that true? Milk, it does the body good, right? Isn't that true? Well, that's an ad slogan, right? That's not science. But when you look at milk, yes, it is very high in calcium. But it's also high in two other things. What's that? Yeah, fat. Well, but you can get skim milk. The argument is skim milk, right?
Skim milk is
worse. Oh, really? Interesting. That's an interesting argument. So when you look at milk, it's high in calcium, but it's also high in animal protein. And what happens with animal protein? Yeah, you lose calcium. But the other issue is it's high in phosphorus. When you look at bone, what makes bone hard? It's a molecule called calcium hydroxyapatite. Say that four times fast. Calcium hydroxyapatite, right? When you look at that molecule, it is not just calcium, but it is phosphorus, and it has magnesium as a part of its production. Vitamin D has a role, right? But the concept is to create that building block, you need a certain calcium to phosphorus ratio. Does that make sense? That is the concept. What favors bone mineralization is a calcium to phosphorus ratio of 2:1 or greater. When you look at milk, the calcium phosphorus ratio is 1:1. When you look at the average dark green leafy vegetable, what do you suppose it is? 3:1, 4:1. Collard, 7:1. And a cup of greens has just as much calcium as a cup of milk. Did you know that? And let me tell you, it has a boatload more of nutrition. Greens are the powerhouse of nutrition. I talked about my grandma yesterday. I put her on the tube feeds that the dietitian recommended, and after about 2 weeks, she wound up in the hospital, admitted again. She became nonverbal. She has Alzheimer's, a stroke. And just today, putting her back on the vegan feeds with the vegan protein powders, I'm actually creating my own tube feeds at home with my juicer. She's talking again. Just today, I said, I love you, Grandma. She's like, I love you too. I'm like, whoa. The caregiver's like, She hasn't said that in like months. Unbelievable. So you can actually get your calcium from greens. And something, if you want added absorption, calcium absorption is not as good as with spinach. Anyone heard of oxalic acid? That tends to bind up the calcium. So if you're going to eat the dark green leafy vegetables, eat ones that are not spinach. But spinach is not evil. I mean, there's plenty of iron in spinach. It's just if you're wanting to favor the calcium, eat more of the other greens. But wait a minute. Won't you get anemic from lack of iron if you're vegan? Have you heard about that? You need to eat some red meat. You know what? You got low blood counts. We need to get you on the steak. Anyone heard that? Heard that? Sure. You know what I find very interesting is that when you look at recent medical literature, did you know they're taking out iron from multivitamins? Does anyone know that? Do you know why they take out iron from multivitamins?
Overdose.
Not just overdose, but the data is clear now. If you supplement with iron long term, you shorten your longevity. Yes. Now, I'm not saying for people who need it, okay? Like, if you have a legit iron deficiency and you're on ferrous sulfate, that's the common prescribed, or ferrous citrate, or whatever you're prescribed. I'm not saying that. But I'm just saying if you're asymptomatic, don't supplement with iron. It's harmful for you. In fact, the most harmful form of iron is the heme iron. Anyone know where that's found?
In the blood.
The blood, heme iron, right? What's very interesting is the heme iron That comes from hemoglobin, right? Your hemoglobin is the molecule that carries oxygen to tissues. And the center of that molecule is iron, right? It's got iron, and then it's got four arms coming off the iron, right, to carry the oxygen. What I find is another intriguing thought is when you look at the molecule chlorophyll, it's very similar. The structure is almost identical, but the center component, anyone know what it is? It's not iron, it's magnesium. Very interesting. And that is also an energy transport molecule. But in that case, it's transferring energy from the sun, right? So when you look at the heme iron, it's actually very toxic to human beings. In fact, when you look at just red meat in general, anyone look at the World Health Organization study, October 26th, 2015. World Health Organization. Anyone see the Time Magazine article on it? It had two strips of bacon in a big X, and it said, "The War on Delicious." No, you see that? And what was the conclusion after they looked at like 500 studies? Scientists from several dozen nations, hundreds of scientists. Anyone know what their conclusion was, October 26, 2015? Red meat is carcinogenic. Yeah, red meat is carcinogenic. And the other interesting thing was, is they gave it a category. Anyone remember the World Health Organization's conclusion about this? What is this now? It's carcinogenic. But this is a 2B, right? 2B or not 2B? That is the question, right? It is carcinogenic. And the concept is, when you look at radiation, it's a 1 over r squared ratio, if you understand that. So if I take this away from my head twice as much, I cut the radiation by 4, right? If I take it 3 times as far, it's I cut the radiation by 9, right? You're correct. 3 times is 8. That's correct. Can't do math. So this is 2B. That's the lowest category of danger. You go to 2A, then you go to 2, then you go to 1. So 2A is what they gave red meat, even if it was organic. Did you know that? You know, it's interesting. When you look at the Amish, anyone know who the Amish are? We're talking about the blue zones, but I'm going to mention them a little bit right here. The Amish have a much lower incidence of cancer compared to the average person. That is proven, beyond a shadow of a doubt. Now, there's a lot of hypotheses as to why that is. They tend to be monogamous before marriage, except for Rumspringa. I don't know if you know what that is, but that's when they kind of cut loose during adolescence, and they can come back if they want to. But in general, they are. They don't smoke. They don't drink, right? So they have reasons to have less cancer. I think one of the biggest reasons, though, anyone has a little step counter? Anyone use little step counters or app? Anyone have a Fitbit, anything like that? Yeah. So if you look at the number of steps per day, you're excited when you get to 10,000, right? Their average male, 19,000. Average female, 14,000. They exercise a lot.
They just do a lot of manual.
Exactly, because they're not using a lot of technology, right? What I find very intriguing, though, is that although their incidence of cancer is less, their longevity, when you look at their lifespan, compared to the average North American, which is 79, by the way, what do you suppose the Amish lifespan is? It's the same. So if they have less cancer, that means they have to have more of something, right? Anyone want to guess what the something is?
Heart disease.
That's correct. Because brothers and sisters, even if it's free-range, organic, grass-fed pork, right? You weren't designed to eat meat. Does that make sense? The Amish cooking is very rich. Very rich. A lot of cream, right? A lot of animal products. They live exactly the same as the rest of us. No difference. But they have a lot less cancer. So this is not what you need for iron. If you want to absorb more of your iron, you can actually consume it with vitamin C. Do you know why? If you have a lower pH, you tend to absorb more iron. And the greens are ideal, right? That's why when you have those greens, you squeeze the lemon juice on it, it tastes so good, right? It's better for you. You absorb more iron. Don't get iron from this. Get iron from dark green leafy vegetables. But here is the final kicker of the argument, right? I gotcha. There's no B12 in a vegan diet. Who's heard that? Sure. Yeah. Where does B12 come from? It's a trick question. Ah, who said bacteria? You've heard this lecture before. No? Most people will say animal products. It's not plant products, for sure. But it doesn't come from animal products, it comes from bacteria. Bacteria synthesize the cobalamines, cyanomethyl cobalamines, right? And you need B12 in very, very little amounts. Like, we're talking like micrograms. And your blood levels are like picograms. Picogram is like 10 to the negative 12. That's insanity. That's like femtograms after that. That's right. You need B12. You need B12. But here's the issue. If it is true that all vegans got B12 deficiency, then every cow on the planet would be vitamin B12 deficient.
Yeah, but their bodies aren't designed like our bodies.
Really? Yeah. How about horses? How about other vegans? Interesting. Did you know all mammals need vitamin B12? They do. They do. So why doesn't the mammals here get vitamin B12 deficiency? Interesting. Wow, maybe they're getting it from the flowers. But remember, it doesn't come from plant foods. Ah, interesting. Think about how commercial produce is made. When you make commercial produce, you sterilize the soil. Did you know that? Does that sound like a good idea? When you are at home in your garden and you're making humus, not hummus, different, totally different, right? Humus. What's humus?
It's like a breakdown.
Yes, it's the breakdown, the fertilizer. You throw all the worms in your compost bin, right? Because you're wanting them to create this really rich compost, humus, right? That is teeming with bacteria. Harmful or helpful? Did you know there's data now that shows that just putting your hands in the soil reverses depression? Specific species are the mycobacteria. We're not talking about mycobacteria tuberculosis. There's lots of different mycobacteria, okay? But just putting your hands in the soil combats depression. Wow. Unbelievable. So do you think it's a good idea to sterilize the soil? Probably not, right? But that's what commercial agriculture does. It's very, very, like, aseptic. And when you look at organic produce versus non-organic, there is more naturally occurring vitamin B12 in which side? The organic. But the argument is that's not enough. It's not enough. It's very small amounts. Then the argument is, have you ever heard of when you get up in the morning, don't brush your teeth first, eat breakfast first, why? Yeah, so you get some of the B12 that's grown on your teeth throughout the night. But then the argument to that is it's not enough. Then the other argument is when you look at the body, which part of this area has plenty of B12 produced in it? Which area here has lots of bacteria in it, like mondo bacteria? The large intestine, the colon, right? But here's the argument against that. That's not where it's absorbed. Vitamin B12 is absorbed in the terminal ileum. The terminal ileum, what part is that? Large intestine? No, it's the small intestine. It's right here. The terminal ileum is right where the small intestine becomes the large intestine. And it has a valve between the two, and it's a one-way valve. It's called the ileocecal valve. And there's a little string down here. Anyone know what that little worm-like appendage is? The appendix, that's right. Interesting. You know what they used to say about the appendix? It's kind of like the tonsils or the spleen. You don't really need it, right? Have you heard that? That's all false now. No, it's true. It's all false. Do you need your spleen? Yes. They think, oh, the spleen doesn't do anything as an adult, right? It's kind of a blood-making organ early on in life, but then after that, you don't need it. But actually, they found out, oh, yeah, you kind of need it. Like, when you don't have a spleen, you are susceptible to encapsulated organisms. Anyone know anyone with sickle cell? Sickle cell? Right? They're very susceptible to encapsulated organisms because they lose their spleen. It's part of the immune system. It's filtered. It filters out the blood. Filters the badness out of there. How about your tonsils? Oh, you need your tonsils. Just rip them out, right? You don't need the appendix. Do you know what part, what system those are a part of? The tonsils and the appendix? The immune system. That's correct. There have been some lawsuits that have come up recently where people just have their appendix taken out without consent. And I think there's been one successful one. Because before it's like, hey, I was just down there, so I took your appendix out. I did you a favor. No, I'm rather fond of my appendix. And now it's gone forever. Very interesting. So the reason why I bring this up is there's plenty of bacteria here. The absorption site's here. Watch this. They have discovered that the ileocecal valve is not completely one way. There is a little reflux through the valve, like acid reflux, but there's no acid found there. At least there shouldn't be. It should be neutralized in the small intestine. So a little bit of the large intestine goes backwards into the small intestine. So what's there now? Lots of bacteria. But is it good to have a bunch of bacteria in your small intestine? No. You can get SBO, small bacterial overgrowth, in your small intestine. That's not good. But interestingly enough, what happens to be right at that junction? The appendix, right? And the appendix is part of what system? The immune system. The appendix sends out white blood cells. They wipe out the bacteria. And what's left over? Their B12. That's very new, though, right now. So, of course, the debate rages back and forth. And they said, but there's no intrinsic factor back there. And it goes back and forth all the time. But the bottom line is, that's not an evolutionary remnant. That's something that you need. And why is that placed there? Stay tuned. So let's go now to some questions. Fat, good or bad? Depends what kind. Are the fats you're looking at bad?
No.
The Mediterranean diet has been studied for centuries, and it has been shown to be very cardioprotective. Olive is very, very good for you. Olive oil, those are monounsaturated fats. They raise your HDL, your good cholesterol. The polys lower the LDL, which is the bad cholesterol. So consider this for a moment. Not all fats are bad. Think about this interesting study done with rhesus monkeys. You know why they do studies on rhesus monkeys, by the way? Any thoughts? They're the most similar genetically to humans, right? Makes sense. So they gave these rhesus monkeys enough fat for them to start accumulating fat on their bodies. And they used two different fats, avocado and dairy fat. Because the party line up until that point was a gram of fat is a gram of fat is a gram of fat. Have you heard that before? A calorie is a calorie is a calorie. You just got to do the math. True or false? Fact or fiction? So they gave them avocado and dairy. And they're supposed to give equal amounts, right? Does that make sense? You're supposed to give equal amounts to get, you know, same gram for gram. They accidentally gave the avocado group more fat. And in spite of that, the avocado group had 30 20% less abdominal fat deposition than the dairy group. But people say, oh, it doesn't really matter where your fat is distributed. Turn to the woman sitting next to you and tell her it doesn't matter where her fat is distributed.
Are you pointing me out?
Exactly. They would say that. Do you think it matters?
That's what you said.
And not just from a cosmetic standpoint. No, I was not singling you out, ma'am.
Do
you know that it matters from a health standpoint how your fat is distributed? Has anyone have heard of apple obesity versus pear obesity? Have you heard about that? Which is the one that kills you? No, apple. Apples are good to eat, but not when you look like one, right? Apple-shaped obesity, or the accumulation of fat around your midsection, is deadly. Associated with everything under the sun, syndrome X, diabetes, hypertension, high cholesterol, cancers, you name it. It's there.
I wasn't always fat.
No one said you were fat. But here's the concept, right? Plant fats shunt the fat away from your midsection. Animal fats, concentrate it. Now everyone's going to go clean out the avocados in the store. What about coconuts? Coconuts are bad for you, right? Well, wait a minute. Don't they have saturated fat? Be honest. True or false? Do they have saturated fat? They do. However, when you look at what type of saturated fat they are, you're the dietitian, right? No, I can't remember. There's somebody here who's a dietetic student. Is there somebody here? No? I know there's like three people from Bastyr that have been coming. But when you look at saturated versus unsaturated, that's just like if there is a double bond between the carbons. This is an unsaturated fatty acid. Specifically, it's a monounsaturated because it has how many double bonds? One, right? This is completely saturated. So this is like coconut and also like animal products. However, there is a difference between the animal products and the coconut and palm, the plant saturated fats. The plant saturated fats are shorter, like lauric, myristic acid. You can look that up if you want to. But they're shorter chain fatty acids, and they're treated completely different by the body. The body can take those shorter chain fatty acids and absorb them into the blood without chylomicron formation. Now, that's a big, long word. All that means is they don't need a carrier molecule that's produced by the liver. Right? If you take a stick of butter and throw it in a swimming pool, what happens? Does it just dissolve into the water? No, it doesn't mix, right? And that's what would happen to you. If you just ingested the butter and the body would just take it straight in, you'd have insta-coronary. Does that make sense? It'd be like, oi, right? It'd be over. You can't do that. So the body has to create carrier molecules to protect you from it. But as it makes those chylomicrons, it raises the cholesterol in your body like no tomorrow. Chylomicron formation is associated with really increasing your cholesterol level. And that's why saturated fats are the most predictable part of the equation to your cholesterol level. It's not even eating cholesterol. You know, eating cholesterol doesn't raise your cholesterol as much as eating saturated fat, particularly animal saturated fats. But the coconut is different. And this is just a little blurb. It's not a big trial. These are small pilot studies. They've looked at people with Alzheimer's now and giving them coconut oil. And you know what they find? Some of those people wake up. And the theory is that the lauric acid, the shorter chain fatty acids, can go into the cell without insulin as the carrier molecule. The theory is that the people who have Alzheimer's, they have insulin-resistant brain cells, similar to the diabetics. So in other words, if it's insulin-resistant, you can't get what into the cell? Glucose, right? So where's your fuel source? Apparently, those brain cells can burn the shorter chain fatty acids. And all they were doing is replacing the butter with coconut oil. That's it. It wasn't like a complicated sort of study, like a couple tablespoons a day. Stay tuned. What about nuts? Nuts are bad for you, right? Because they're really high fat. True or false? Yeah. Nuts actually lower cholesterol and cardiac risk. Did you know that? Doesn't that seem counterintuitive? They're loaded with fats, but they're loaded with polyunsaturated fats. Does that make sense? They're loaded with good fats. One of these studies that was done at my alma mater, Loma Linda, it was called the Walnut Study. And they wanted to see the effect of walnuts on lowering cholesterol. But how do you do a blinded study like that? It was pretty tough. So they actually made the meals for the patients and put the ground walnuts in. And then in the other control group, they had to add other fats other than the walnut, right? And the people were eating an average of a cup and a half of walnuts a day. Now that's a lot of walnuts, right? Did you know they lowered their LDL by 36 points in a month? That's like a drug effect. That lowering is lowering your cardiac risk by 70%. Did you know that? That's unreal. Unreal. And that was with walnuts. Very similar. What are the side effects of walnuts? That was my point, is that it was a lot of walnuts, so I was surprised that it had such a positive effect. I would expect that too many would not be so great, right? Would not be so great. But I'll get to that concept in a second. How many nuts should I eat, right? How many nuts should I eat? How many of you have had a nut tree growing up in your yard? Yeah. When you come to that nut tree, how many nuts do you eat? Do you eat like a bucket at a sitting? A handful. Why? You get tired of it, right? So you got to climb the tree or shake the tree or whatever and then take the fruit off the nut. You got to crack the nut. You got to pick the nut out, the meat out of the nut, right? By that time, you've burned more calories in the nut. Does that make sense? So you eat a small amount generally for convenience sake. That's when you eat things in their natural form. Does that make sense? Nuts are harder to get at than fruits and vegetables, aren't they? Ever wonder why? I'll show you something amazing. Who can tell me what the highest fat nut is in existence? Macadamia. Yes! All right. This is a macadamia, by the way. Did you know that the macadamia nut has not one but two shells around it? Coincidence? I think not. Interesting, isn't it? The very food that you shouldn't eat too much of is harder to get at. I find that intriguing, don't you? How about this? Carbs are bad, true or false? Well, but how easy is it to get at them? That's the concept. Does that make sense? Yeah. How many can you get at? Like what you were saying, if you had your own nut tree, you'd eat like a handful or two at a time, right? Too much trouble, exactly. So what about this? Carbs are bad, true or false? Depends on the kind of carb, right? Because if you eat a piece of, like this, whole grain bread, what benefit are you getting from the whole grain? Fiber, right? Fiber, you get the fiber benefit. Also, we talked about enriched. Who remembers about enriched from last night? So when they make enriched bread or enriched flour, they take 20 vitamins and minerals and the fiber out, and they put back how many?
Four.
If I stole $20 from you and gave you back $4, are you enriched? No, you're enraged, right? But that's what they're doing. They put back niacin, thiamine, riboflavin, and iron. That's it. Pretty bad, huh? I'm going to give you a true story. I was at a conference, and there was a bunch of medical professionals there. And we all went out to eat, and we were at the baked potato bar, okay? And I was ahead of these two female colleagues, and I let them go ahead of me, and I was just kind of watching them at the baked potato bar. And the lady in front grabbed the potato with her hand and went, just mashed it. And then she took some butter on there. And then she took cheddar cheese, sour cream. And she kept going and going and going. And the other colleague, she was just watching her friend. She couldn't take it anymore. She finally said something, "Girlfriend, you might as well just slide that on your thighs because that's where it's going." So it doesn't matter with the carb. It's what you put on the carb. Does that make sense? You can put a bunch of butter and sour cream and cheddar cheese, right?
Well, butter's better than margarine.
Well, I mean, the potato was good without all that stuff. Well, I guess you got the, I don't know what this is, onions here? That's probably good. If you put a bunch of high fructose corn syrup, I mean jam, right,
yeah,
on the carb, it's probably not so good for you anymore. Does that make sense? But a whole grain piece of bread, yeah, it's pretty good for you. And you also get the fiber benefit. In fact, even the same type of food isn't just the same. When you look at 100 calories of an apple, 100 calories of applesauce, 100 calories of apple juice, have you ever heard diabetics say, "Oh, doc, you give me an apple, you're going to kill me. It's pure carbs." Have you heard that? Shouldn't give fruit to a diabetic. Is that true?
No,
it's not true. It's false. When you eat an apple and you look at the insulin and glucose curves, you have a gradual rise and a gradual fall. If you eat the same calories, okay, exact same calories, but it's applesauce, what do you think the curve looks like? A little steeper, right? And then a fall. How about 100 calories from apple juice? Same 100 calories. What do you think? Right? It's more of a spike. Why are these treated differently by the body? What's the difference? Only fiber. Did you know that? Fiber slows the glucose absorption by the body. Yes, the body likes gradual rise and fall. Yes. Well, you remove some of the fiber because there's no peel. Does that make sense? The fiber in apples is usually pectin, mostly pectin. So the difference is the fiber, right? Do you need fiber? Sure, right? Absolutely. And I'm not saying juice is evil, right? I'm not saying juice is evil. I'm not saying refined foods are evil. You just have to be cautious with them. Does that make sense? In fact, take a look at this. This is a verse in the ancient literature, Deuteronomy. Now, this is obviously symbolic, but I think it's very funny, really. Curds from the cattle, concentrated food, right? Milk of the flock, again, concentrated food. Fat of lambs and rams of the breed of Bashan and goats with the choicest wheat or refined wheat. And you drank wine, the blood of grapes, juice. What was the result of eating all this refined food? But you grew fat. You grew thick. You are covered with fat. There's nothing wrong with eating refined foods, right? Occasionally, right? Occasionally. But when you consider that a tablespoon of corn oil has 14 ears of corn.
Just one tablespoon?
Yes, isn't that insanity?
I've never heard of it.
But it's true. And here's the thing. Could you sit down and eat 14 ears of corn? Probably not, right? It'd be difficult. Also, that tablespoon of corn oil doesn't have any vitamins or mineral or fiber in it. It's had all the nutrition sucked out of it. It's just got fat. Did you know that? So it's not evil to eat refined foods, but they tend to be empty calories in general, right? Instead of slathering a bunch of butter on your potato, how about mash up an avocado? You still get the fat, right? But you're getting massive amounts of nutrition. So healthy, plenty of fiber, plenty of potassium. Did you know potassium is very, very rich? Avocados, coconut water, avocados, very high in potassium. Very good for you. How about the ideal beverage? What do you suppose that is? Dihydrogen oxide, right? H2O. In fact, what about soda? Isn't that good for you? What's wrong with soda? not just the sugar. What else? Yeah, what kind of acid? Carbonic, phosphoric, right? You've always seen that experiment. You put the tooth in the Coca-Cola, right, and dissolves away. But that's not the worst thing. I haven't heard it yet. What's the worst thing, maybe? Well, we talked about the acid. We talked about the acid. We talked about the refined sugar. What else is in this that's not good for you? What chemicals? Yes, that's no good for you. That's illegal in some countries. Did you know that? Not ours. Yes, it's illegal in some countries. The coloring is probably not great for you. I still haven't heard the thing in there that's really bad. Caffeine, yes, it's a drug. Did you know that the levels of caffeine are so high in our Puget Sound now that it's disrupting the fish's life cycle? Did you know that? Where do you think that caffeine comes from? Yes. We are peeing it out of our Starbucks. I'll take questions at the end. What about milk? Isn't that good to hydrate yourself? Well, as an actual hydration modality, it's not so great. Because milk is high in protein, and did you know it takes 7 times as much water to process protein as carbs? So when you drink a lot of milk, that's not going to really quench your thirst, because the body's got to suck a lot of water out of you to process the protein. What about coffee? Isn't that good for hydration? Actually, did you know coffee dehydrates you? Because the caffeine is a diuretic. That's right. Also, caffeine in large amounts is an arrhythmic agent. Do you know what that means? Right? The other thing is that coffee raises the risk of bladder cancer very slightly, but in the case of total honesty and transparency, coffee use, like people who drink coffee in the morning, it does lower the risk of colon cancer. Anyone know how that works? They drink their coffee, and then they go to the bathroom. They take a dump, right? Because it stimulates their colon. So I don't think it's necessarily the coffee itself, but the fact that they're having a bowel movement. And that lowers their risk of colon cancer. What about alcohol? Isn't that a good thing to hydrate yourself with? No, because alcohol is also a diuretic. Did you know that? People who are in the bars, and they're just like peeing and peeing and peeing. But they're really dry. But haven't you heard that 1 to 2 drinks is good for you? Who's heard that? How many people have heard that? Isn't that true, right? Moderate alcohol consumption is good for your heart. Haven't you heard that? What do you guys think about that? Interesting. So I'm going to share this with you. When they found what we call the French paradox. Anyone know what the French paradox is? You can look this up if you want. The French paradox is this. The French eat a lot of animal products, like cheeses and meats and stuff like that, but they have less heart disease. Why? That's the French paradox. And they found that it was isolated to their wine. When they had consumption, moderate consumption, of the red and white wines, they lowered their heart disease risk. However, what they didn't tell you was this, is that researchers from my alma mater at Stanford, they repeated the study with pure ethanol, right? Do you think that was cardioprotective? No. They isolated the active ingredients in the red and white wine to the grapes. Quercetin and resveratrol were the powerful antioxidants that combated heart disease. And that is not found in the alcohol. It's found in the grapes.
Well, what if they take the seeds out?
The resveratrol and quercetin are found just under the skin. They're not found in the seeds. So that is the active compound, not the ethanol. The alcohol, right, is on for the ride. You're getting the quercetin and resveratrol from the grapes, right? So if you want a good Pinot, a Gewürztraminer, right, get the grapes. You can get those from Navarro Vineyards, and there's also a vineyard in PUC. I'm trying to remember the name of them. I don't work for them. I don't get any kickbacks from them. But you can actually get the wine-making grapes as juice. You can get the real deal. Here's another thought process. But wait a minute. The ancient literature actually warned you about alcohol. Wine is a mocker. Intoxicating drink arouses what? Brawling. And whoever is led astray by it is not wise. But here is kind of a dichotomy. You have a negative admonition about alcohol, but then you have this interesting verse. Who knows who Paul was in the New Testament? Didn't he recommend for Timothy, right, to have a little vino, right? Was he telling Timothy to have a stiff one? Was he? Interesting. Well, doesn't this say that? Don't just drink only water, but use a little wine for your stomach's sake and your frequent infirmities.
Because water was not as
healthy? Well, it's interesting. Like, you've heard people say when you go to certain cities, like let's say in third world countries, they say, whatever you do, don't drink the water, right? Corinth was a big city. Maybe could that have been a problem? I'm going to show you something interesting, though. When you look at this verse, as the new wine is found where? In the cluster. And one says, do not destroy it. Why? For a blessing is in it. Is that verse talking about alcohol or grape juice? It's grape juice. Why? Because it's wine found where? In the cluster. You see, most people don't realize that when you see the word wine in the Bible, it can mean fermented or unfermented. Right? So Paul was not telling Timothy to take a nightcap every day, right? He's telling him to drink juice. Interesting, don't you think? What about even the container for your beverage? Do you think that matters? How many of you have ever been on the road trip, right? And you're out of water, and you're like, hey, honey, give me that water bottle that's been sitting in the back for like 4 months. Here, give me that. I know we got that one there. You grab it, and you open the bottle, and you drink, and it tastes like plastic. Why is that? Yes. Those compounds that you're tasting are dioxins, the melted plastic. And the way it's produced most effectively is heating and cooling. And heating and cooling. What happens in the back of your window? Heating and cooling, right? And the more porous the plastic, the softer the plastic, the more the dissolving. Think that's good for you? Like when you get those styrofoam plastic things, put them in the microwave, and then that, you know that corner that kind of gets melted in a little? Eat the food there. Dioxins have an estrogen-like effect on your body, and it's not a good estrogen-like effect. Do not eat them, right? So if you're going to have a container, try to have either the harder plastics. I don't even recommend that. I recommend glass or stainless steel because very little of that dissolves. Very, very little of it dissolves. Especially when you're heating and cooling, that's when you get the dioxin production. So don't do that. So pure water is best. What about people who say, hey, doc, I only eat one meal a day, all day long. Are some people just grazers? Is that true? What do you think? Well, this is a study from Italy, right? And we have to go like this, Italy, when we say it. They looked at meal frequency and colon cancer risk. They looked at 2 meals a day, 3 meals a day, 4 meals a day. Which frequency had the most colon cancer? 4. Which had the least? 2. Does it matter? Yes, it does matter how frequently you eat. You weren't designed to be constantly eating. You got to give your body time to regenerate those enzymes. Does that make sense? But the funny thing is that anytime you consult dietary, they always say small, frequent meals, small, frequent meals, small, frequent meals. I don't know about that. I mean, even at night, right? These tube feeds are running all the time. Did you know that? But doesn't it make sense that your body should rest in total? Does that make sense when you rest? Well, right? You wouldn't want to be eating at night, right? But what about your teeth? Look at this. They used to say that when you would snack on a sugary snack, it would harm your teeth. And the way that works is that there is a flow from the inside of your tooth to the outside of your teeth. And that flow is through the dentin tubules. That's good flow, right? Because if there's a flow from the inside to outside, the bacteria can't penetrate, right? Does that make sense? But you know what they've discovered? That it's not a sugary snack. It's any snack. When you snack between meals, you interrupt the flow. And the very recent dental literature says that they recommend about 5 hours between meals now. Ever heard that before? That's another lecture. How about, when do you suppose is the worst time to eat your biggest meal? How many of you know who the sumo wrestlers are? How many know? What country are they from? Now, is Japan generally a country of large people or small people? Small. So how is it that these guys can override their genetics? They do it with a special program. For breakfast, the sumo wrestler doesn't eat anything. Did you know that? No breakfast. They have a big lunch and then they sleep. When do they eat their biggest meal? Late at night. And they go to places like McDonald's. In fact, people, when I was in Japan, people went to McDonald's not to eat, but to watch the sumo wrestlers eat and take down massive amounts of fat and carbs. And then they would go to bed. Ladies and gentlemen, we are the sumo nation. What meal do we skip? Breakfast. What meal do we eat the largest? Oh, no. We're the sumo. Yes. When you look at metabolic curves, when you're sleeping, you're at what's called your basal metabolic rate. Does that make sense? Your lowest. When you wake up, what do you suppose happens? Right? And as you follow that metabolic curve, it dips a little bit about 3 p.m. And then at night, where do you think it goes? Down, right? And when you go to sleep, what happens? Like, and what do you really do at night? Here's the exercise most of us do on the remote controller, right? Not very much. So where do you suppose you should eat the most calories if that's your metabolic curve throughout the day? Well, breakfast, right? Because you want to front load your calories because you're going to burn that all day long. In fact, when you look at Dr. Cup, you can look this up. It wasn't a large study, it was like 600 patients. But the only thing he did is what made the study ingenious. He says, eat breakfast. That's it. That was his study. That's it. Eat breakfast, eat lunch, don't eat after 3 p.m. That's it. Did you know that all of his patients lost weight? And some of them reversed their anemia. And those who were on thyroid medication were able to back off the medications. Now, why do you suppose that it would help people with hypothyroidism? How does that work? What do you think breakfast does to your metabolism? Revs it up. Yes. When you look at people who eat breakfast versus those who don't, those who eat breakfast burn 25% more calories for the whole day.
But what kind of breakfast?
Well, that's the point, right? You need a healthy breakfast. We talked about last night, what do you want to make sure to include with your breakfast? Yes, whole grains. Yeah, proteins too are good. But this is the concept. If you eat most of your calories earlier in the day, you'll have that for energy instead of the spare tire, right? You don't want that. Okay, give the pregnant woman anything she wants during pregnancy. No, isn't that true? Step away from the chocolate and nobody gets hurt. Isn't that what you're supposed to, right? You see these guys going out at 3 a.m. getting the anchovy peanut butter pizza, right? Isn't that, right? Doesn't the woman have a sense on what she needs, right? Aren't her cravings, like, correlated to what her body needs? Have you heard about that, right? What about pica? Do you think our cravings are always wise? You know, this is a real entity. Did you know this? What does the pregnant woman crave when she has pica? Dirt. Ice. Do you think that's healthy? No. It's actually a form of anemia during pregnancy. Do you think your cravings are always a safe guide? No. You should be guided by reason, by design, by understanding how your body works, right? In fact, prenatal nutrition is very important. They used to say, if you are pregnant, you should supplement with folic acid. They don't say that anymore. They said, if you're planning to be pregnant, supplement with... Now they don't say that anymore. They said, if you're between this age and this age, supplement with folic acid. And does anyone know why they're doing that? They're trying to prevent what? Not anemia. Yes, neurological what? Which ones? Spina, bifida, and encephaly, right? Devastating conditions. No brain baby? Wow. Right? Paralyzed baby? Quadriplegic baby? Not good, right? Not good. And it's so simple. It's just folic acid. That simple. Do you think prenatal nutrition is important? Look at this. Who received this advice? You shall conceive and bear a son. Now, therefore, eat whatever you want. It doesn't matter. Is that what it says? Please be careful not to drink wine or similar drink and not to eat anything unclean. Who was this advice given to? The mother of Samson. Hundreds of years before prenatal nutrition was recognized as an entity. Absolutely profound. Now, was this during her pregnancy? When was this advice given? Before. Why? Look at the verb. You what? Shall. This is preconception. Do you think that matters? Yes, it does. True or false, breast milk is 100% complete vitamins and minerals for newborns? No. False. False. That's actually not the concept. But what is breast milk missing? What? Vitamin D. Did you know that? There is no vitamin D in breast milk. At all. It's got B12, it's got iron, it's got calcium, it's got right? Did you know there's no vitamin D in breast milk? Whether you are Christian or evolutionist, it doesn't matter. Did you know that? What does that phenomena tell you? There's no vitamin D in breast milk. So that tells you you were never meant to get it like this. Does that make sense? How are you meant to get your vitamin D? From the sun. From the sun. I know we don't get enough. Is that what you're saying? Yes, but here's the concept. You know what I say to that? Do you know where 95% of all species live on this planet? Yes, outside, yes. They mostly don't live inside, yes. So they live within a few degrees of the equator. Did you know that? There's a reason for that, guys. Are there some species that can live in, like, the Arctic Circle? Yes, but very few. Very few. Does that make sense? And I'm not saying that supplementation is evil, right? We talked about this yesterday. What is the MS capital of the world? Anyone know? Right here. Why? Well, Could be more than that, right? I still have to review about 29 more papers, but there's a good argument that shows that vitamin D supplementation is not the same as the sun. Not the same. No matter if you get the active form and the D3 and all this other stuff that they're trying to say, when you get it in the form of sunlight, it actually turns genes on and turns genes off. There's actual gene regulation that's going on. That's not the same with the supplementation. In fact, yes, supplements help osteoporosis. Yes, supplements help bone mineralization. Yes, supplements help osteomalacia. But there is some evidence that the supplements worsen the autoimmune diseases, of which MS is one. Lupus, Crohn's, ulcerative colitis, rheumatoid arthritis, even asthma. Did you know that? Did you know that's an actual autoimmune disease? In a sense, right? Is there a difference between the sun and the supplement? Absolutely. There's no question with that. What is the difference? Not sure. But what I'm telling you, as a scientist, it doesn't matter what you believe in philosophically. This concept should tell you something. There is only vitamin D missing in breast milk and nothing else. And in fact, when you look at vitamin D, they're actually going to reclassify it as it's not a vitamin. They're going to reclassify it. Does anyone know what compound it looks the most like? It looks most like testosterone and estrogen and progesterone. It is a steroid. It is powerful. Vitamin D is powerful for you. They used to think it's just about bone health. Not anymore. Vitamin D is now associated with cancer prevention. There's even literature on the immune system. There was a Chinese study that looked at pneumonia. If you had normal vitamin D levels versus high normal, you were 300% more protected from death from the pneumonia at a higher level. But the theory is that the vitamin D is a marker and not something you can manipulate, if that makes sense. Like if I come to you and I suck all the cholesterol out of your body, that doesn't somehow save you from heart disease. Does that make sense? Same thing with vitamin D. If I just pump you full of vitamin D, that doesn't just magically make you healthy. Does that make sense? It's just a marker of your overall health. Okay, I will share one concept from microwaves. And just to give the medical boards, okay, the USMLE are the medical boards, like the MD boards, right? They did have a question on microwaves on my USMLE step one. They said, John is a 47-year-old bachelor and microwaves all his food. What nutrient is he most likely to be deficient in?
Every one of them.
Every one of them. That's pretty funny. So what's nice about multiple choice tests is you can usually like eliminate like A, B, C, D, E, right? That doesn't work on the boards because they went A, B, C, D all the way to R, R. There were like 30 different choices. They listed every vitamin and every mineral. Anyone know what this is? Folic acid. For some reason, folic acid is very sensitive to microwaves. But you're right, cooking in general tends to destroy most nutrients, but not all. Can anyone name a nutrient that's actually more bioavailable by cooking? Yes, lycopene. Anyone else? Calcium, right? So cooking isn't evil, right? But just be aware that you shouldn't nuke all your food. Can what you eat change your DNA? True or false? False, actually. You can't actually change your DNA. But here's the good news. Yes, that's right. That's correct. You can actually change your epigenes. Does anyone know what epigenetics is? Raise your hand. It's epigenes, which means that which sits on top of epi, right, the genes. So the concept is your epigenes can be influenced by lifestyle. And what those epigenes do is they turn them on or off. And what you want to do is turn all your bad genes off and turn all the good genes on, right? This is an interesting study in the Lancet Oncology. They looked at middle-aged men who were at low risk for prostate cancer. They put them on a lifestyle program that was very aggressive: walking, vegan diet, stress management, drinking water, etc. And what they found is that the ends of their DNA, called telomeres, anyone know what telomeres are? Anyone has shoelaces? Someone show us your shoelaces. Yeah. Show us your shoelaces. What do you have on the ends of your shoelaces? Yeah, what are those tips for? Those plastic tips. Keeps it from unraveling. That's what a telomere is. It's on the ends of your DNA and it keeps it from unraveling. It's not quite that simple. It's a little bit more complex, but you get the point, right? The telomeres have always been thought of as the cell clock. They get shorter and shorter and shorter. When they're gone, what happens? Cell death, right? They found that these guys, middle-aged guys, were able to lengthen their telomeres. Wow. That's the first time they've ever published that phenomenon. It's not a cell clock because you can turn it backwards now. Is it possible to grow younger through your lifestyle? Perhaps. I can tell you that I got my first gray hairs when I was in residency. But then, when I backed off my hours, they went away. I actually plucked them and showed brown on the proximal end and gray on the distal end. Now, in case you're wondering, I still have gray hairs now. I'm not just out of residency, although I may look like I'm just out of residency. I've been practicing for 16 years as a physician. Yes, yes. So, but there's other reasons to eat whole plant foods besides being healthy. How about your carbon footprint? Who's heard of a carbon footprint? Right? You don't want to leave a bunch of waste, right? Or damage resources. This verse says that God will actually destroy those who destroy the earth. God is concerned about the earth. In fact, when you buy an airline ticket, you can pay them more money to offset your carbon footprint. Have you ever seen that stuff? I guess not very convincing, huh? But if you eat plant foods, you are actually creating a smaller carbon footprint than anything else. Even if you drove a hybrid or rode your bicycle, just eating vegan creates a lot less utilization of resources. Does that make sense? Anyone heard of California's water crisis? Who's heard of that? Right? They're always in a water crisis. But did you know that the entire consumer usage of water makes up about 4% of their total water availability? So if you, right, put the brick in the toilet, take a shorter shower, right, and you cut it by 25%, you've saved what percent of the total? One. Anyone know what the majority? Yes, how did you know that? That's crazy, isn't it? More than 50% is utilized for meat production. In fact, if you were in California and you just were vegetarian, I'm not even saying vegan, just vegetarian one meal a week, just one meal, you would save more water than the entire consumer usage combined. If every one of the 60 million people was vegetarian, just one meal a day. No, one meal a week. Right? They don't tell you that, do they? You can look it up, though. Take a look. Here's another interesting argument. Someone sent me this sticker, and I'm not necessarily endorsing PETA. I don't get any endorsements from them. But it's true. Jesus loves me, too. One of my friends is a graphic designer, and he's a real joker. He took this image, manipulated it, and said, Jesus ate me, too. Come on. Crazy, right? But here's the concept. Do you have to kill in order to live? Yes or no? No, right? You can survive on whole plant foods. You can. You can actually thrive on whole plant foods. Here's a very interesting concept. If you look at the arguments from anatomy, from physiology, from medical disease prevention, you will find that the literature is very clear. You were designed for plant foods, pure and simple. And where did that come from? Well, Genesis. God says, behold, I have given you every herb bearing seed, every tree in which the fruit of a tree yielding seed, to you it shall be for what? Food. What did God add after sin? Not meat, no. Vegetables, right? Very interesting. God says, this is a curse. Did you know this? This was the curse of sin. What I find is very intriguing. You know what the curse is? Interesting. In the what? Sweat of your brow you shall eat bread, and you shall eat what? What's the herb of the field? Vegetables. I'm going to share this with you. If you look at all of the lifestyle medicine, the two most powerful components to combat cancer and other diseases are vigorous physical exercise and vegetables. Coincidence? I think not. That is the curse of the Bible. Isn't that interesting? And God says, cursed is the ground for your sake. That's an interesting phraseology, don't you think? I don't think that it's a coincidence that these two components combat disease like no other. Have you ever had a friend who's a smoker and take a sheet and wrap them in a wet sheet pack, put them in a sauna? Did you know if they sweat and sweat and sweat what that sheet will look like? It'll be yellow. Not dirty, it'll be yellow. You know what it is? That's the nicotine. They are actually detoxing their drug in the sweat. Amazing. Amazing. What I would like to end with is whether you see something as a blessing or a curse. This is my favorite verse from the Talmud, from the Old Testament scriptures. God commanded us all these to keep his statutes, to love the Lord our God for what? For his good? For our good. How often? Always. That he might preserve us what? Alive as it is this day. Why is God saying, eat this, don't eat this? Live this way, don't live this way. He's trying to keep you alive. And I believe that every one of us, if we follow our original design, will enjoy life, and we will enjoy it more abundantly. Thank you very much.